This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Can an NFL running back muster the same force as a running bull? And does a 9-foot python squeeze harder than a martial arts star? John Brinkus answers these questions on his show Sports Science. It's a TV series on ESPN that uses technology to explore the myths and the mysteries of athletic performance. He works with a team of engineers, physicists, and stunt coordinators to analyze how professional athletes do what they do. He's also curious about the absolute limits of human performance. In his book, Perfection Point, he examines artificial barriers of success and misconceptions about what makes the best kind of athlete. John Brinkus joins us on the show today to talk about the science of sports. Welcome, John. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a bit about your background now. How did you get interested in examining the extremes in sports?
Yeah, I actually went to the University of Virginia, and there I majored in rhetoric communication studies, which was the theory of the argument. And a lot of people say, wow, was that major useful? It actually is quite useful because everything that you're doing in life is to create an argument. Now, I founded a production company with my partner, Mickey Stern, and it's called Base Productions. And we specialized in two different kinds of programming: sports programming and science programming. And science has always been a thing that I've just been incredibly passionate about my entire life. I don't read fiction. I don't like to dabble in stuff that isn't true. So I've always been reading science and learning science. It's a very big passion of mine. And growing up in the D.C. area, I was blessed to, grow up in the Joe Gibbs era with the Redskins and to have 3 Super Bowls. And so I was a total sports nut. And I played athletics, played football, basketball, baseball growing up. Well, when we were doing our sport programming and science programming, we created a show called XMA, Extreme Martial Arts, for the Discovery Channel. That was hosted by Tom Cruise. It was done in cooperation with The Last Samurai, and it was a big success on Discovery. So National Geographic came along and said, hey, we want to do something like that, but science it up for us even more. So we created a show called Fight Science that was on National Geographic. That became one of their top 10 programs of all time. Fox owned National Geographic, and they also owned Fox Sports. They decided to air Fight Science opposite the original Peyton Manning versus Eli Manning Sunday Night Football game. Fight Science on Fox Sports was the 3rd highest rated program of the year with no promotion. People loved it, and they said, oh my God, what do you have? What else do you have? We said, well, we have this show called Sports Science, where we're taking the fight science approach and applying it to all sports. So what our real mission is with Sports Science is to take the world's greatest athletes and to push them to the absolute limit.
All right. Well, let's get an example. We've got a clip here from one of your episodes with an NFL running back, Brandon Jacobs.
Brandon Jacobs, at 6'4", 264, is the biggest running back in the NFL. But how much force does he generate when breaking a tackle? To find out how hard Brandon hits, I'm going to let him plow me over at full force. I'll be outfitted with an accelerometer, which will measure the force Brandon delivers when he hits me.
Okay, you ready, John? 3, 2, 1, go!
Our sensors show that Brandon ran over me with nearly 2,500 pounds of force. At running back, Brandon Jacobs' size and speed is a combination the NFL has never seen.
At 6'4", 264 pounds, it appeared as though, from the video, that he actually hit you.
Yeah, he hit me.
He couldn't hit you.
This is what you didn't see. What you didn't see is that, which is on, and that's posted up on ESPN's website. That was take number 7.
No.
7. Because, you're right, he couldn't muster up the courage to hit me at full force. And so he's hitting me at half speed, 3/4 speed, and I know what the numbers generally should be. And he's killing me even at that level. And I'm like, dude, you're killing me. Hitting me at half speed, you got to go full force. It took him 7 times to muster up the courage to get up to maximum velocity, to lower his shoulder and to plow me over like that. What I always like to tell people with sports science is, I mean, there are 2 things that we have to be. One is entertaining, the other is correct. So we can't fake something. It's got to be real. So that hit has to be full force in order for us to be able to say what we want to say.
Killing Me Softly. I like the first seven, takes. But look at, what'd you say, what, 4,000 pounds of pressure?
He hit me with 2,500 pounds of force, which is an unbelievable. Obviously, it's over a ton of force.
And then later on, you show what happens kind of in an actual game when somebody runs up to meet him.
Exactly.
And that quintuples the force.
Yeah, I mean, it goes way over 3,000 pounds.
It's why doesn't every linebacker, or Brandon for that matter, break a bone?
The reason why I didn't get hurt is I'm actually in decent shape. You know, I'm a decent athlete. I'm in shape. I mean, if you're a regular Joe and you're not in particularly good shape, then, you know, obviously you're going to get hurt. The question of, well, why then on every play is there not somebody hurt in the NFL or even at the collegiate level? I mean, the answer is, well, there's always that risk. That risk exists. But when you're an elite athlete playing a sport, I mean, these guys know how to fall, how to take a hit, how to soften a blow. I mean, that's part of the game too, right? Is that you don't say to yourself, well, I want to absorb the maximum amount of force possible. It's like knowing how to apply the force.
Yeah, but I mean, training and exercise and all of those things can prepare you. But if you ask the average human, an average citizen, can a human withstand that? They'd say, no, you'd break a bunch of bones, which I think gets to another point that you make, and certainly in your book, that we can endure and withstand a heck of a lot more than we imagine we can.
Absolutely. I mean, we are faster, we are stronger, we're tougher than we even know ourselves. I mean, one thing that we are fabulous at is placing limits on ourselves. In my book, The Perfection Point, you know, I really want to break down those limits and those barriers and say, what is the maximum, the best that we possibly could do?
And ironically, I mean, on the one hand, if you gave me those numbers, I would say my human body and even the best prepared human body couldn't withstand that without some kind of a break. On the other hand, sometimes athletes make it look too easy. And that very Brandon Jacobs sort of talked about that and kind of the value of watching this stuff and watching the science.
I'm going to take my big body and plow right into him and let people sitting at home on their couches watching the game saying, why did that guy break free like that? Come on, I could do better than that. So let people see that. You know what? No, you can't do that.
He's speaking the truth.
It takes a certain amount of training. So are there limits? I mean, remember famously the 4-minute mile, right?
Exactly. Here's a fabulous example. So we're awesome at placing limits. So we as human beings say, okay, the impossible, the absolute impossible is to run 1 mile in 4 minutes or less. It's just impossible to do that. Now, when you really sit back and you think about that, you say, all right, a mile is an arbitrary distance. Just, it's completely arbitrary, right? 5,280 feet, just totally arbitrary. And 4 minutes is an arbitrary chunk of time. So to put those two things together, isn't it a coincidence that we're dealing with round numbers? So limits very often are not going to fall exactly on a round number, precisely at 4 minutes, precisely from 1 mile. So in 1954, you have Sir Roger Bannister. He comes along, and it takes human beings, modern evolution, hundreds of thousands of years to develop to be a species that can break this incredible barrier, right? And we do that, and it took us thousands of years. But then 46 days later, it was done again. And then within 10 years, it's broken 300 times. That's once every 12 days. I would say that the 4-minute mile is not a great barrier of what the absolute limit is in human performance. So what I do in the book is I take, you know, how fast could we run? How high can we jump? How fast can we run a marathon? How far can we drive a golf ball? Take all these sort of iconic ideas and really calculate out, all right, what is the ultimate limit? If we were to take every environmental condition were perfect, and if the equipment were perfect, and the athlete were perfect, if everything were perfect on that one moment, what's the best that we can actually do?
How do you do that? I mean, aren't the measurements, I mean, you can do the atmospheric conditions and, you know, the topographic conditions and all of that, but the human being, that we are variable, aren't we?
We are variable. And what you can do is you can take the structure of a human and say, okay, in order to still be considered human, and that's a big caveat that I put in the book, is, look, you know, 2 million years from now, I don't know if we're going to have 10 legs or what's going to end up happening. But assuming that we're still, you know, a bipedal mammal, that, you know, we're walking around with 2 legs and we look generally the same, you can calculate out what the ideal is in every aspect of a sport. So you could say, in terms of how high you could jump, using it as a great example, well, do you think, what's the highest point that anybody could ever touch You know, meaning they read, they jump up with their hand and how high they touch. Well, is that going to be somebody who's 5 feet tall? Obviously not. No matter how high you jump, if you're 5 feet tall, you're never going to be able to touch the highest point. Now, is it going to be somebody who's 8 feet tall, some freak of nature? No, because you couldn't create enough force to get off the ground. So it falls somewhere between 5 feet and 8 feet. So then you start narrowing down that scope and saying, well, is it going to be someone who's 7 feet? Is it going to be a Dirk Nowitzki who's 7 feet tall and, you know, that can jump relatively high? That's probably not going to be somebody like Dirk because his vertical leap could never be high enough, even with, you know, wingspan included. So how tall is that person actually going to be? And you can calculate it out and say what the ideal is for every aspect.
Now, there's the physics involved in all of this. And then there are those intangibles that I think make great athletes. And if you think about, you know, just the NFL, there's probably, what, 33 teams or something like that. Say maybe there's 100 quarterbacks in the NFL. And, you know, the gap between the best and the worst is pretty big. And yet that's 100 human beings. So there must be something else going on mentally and psychologically.
Yeah, the thing that you can never test that, and this is to me, the separates between good and great is your ability to perform under pressure. That is absolutely the X factor, and there's no way to test it because no matter what you do in a laboratory of creating pressure, your mind knows, well, this isn't the real deal. I'm not really playing in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, no matter what you do. So you have no idea how someone's going to react to a situation that requires them to perform at that moment at the highest level. And that's only something that you can see as they progress along in their career. When Tom Brady gets in the game for Drew Bledsoe, no one's like, well, that's going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. But you see how he performs under pressure, and that really is what differentiates him. When you look at, well, why is Tom Brady so good? He performs in the clutch, and it's that simple, that he performs when it matters most. And that really is the definition for pretty much every sport, is can you perform at the highest level at the most important moment?
It seems to me, though, in any athletic, in any competition, but we're talking about athletics now, so let's stay with that, that there's two kinds of pressure. One is the objective pressure. It's the big game. It's the fourth quarter. There's 2 minutes left. You're down by 5 points. That's a lot of pressure. But then there's the kind of very subjective pressure. You've just thrown three interceptions. You struck out 4 times in the big game. You have failed already in this big game, and somehow you got to put that behind you.
I mean, believe me, that short-term memory, like having a very short-term memory is a skill set of, I don't know how you teach that. Right. When I know for a fact, I would be a terrible quarterback in the NFL because I do think about things that, oh, I'm just messed up. And I think about, how am I not going to do that? And, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. You don't have time to think about that. So when you see these quarterbacks, and even when you look at the personalities of quarterbacks, you know, look at somebody, in this recent draft, look at Colin Kaepernick or Andrew Luck. Those guys are such cool customers, right? They're these very even-keeled personalities. They're not really high. They're not really low. They don't get super excited. They don't get really upset. They stay in that middle zone, and they can be objective about their own performance. That's something that's really hard to teach as well.
I want to play another clip from your TV show and talk about another aspect of the program. Let's listen to this.
To test Larry Fitzgerald's hand-eye coordination, we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to see if Larry can catch passes while hanging upside down.
You can be in crazy positions trying to catch a football. You could be diving. You could be reaching backwards.
Our eye-tracking technology will let us see everything Larry sees when he's upside down.
Being upside down, catching football is different than anything I've ever done before. Everything is in reverse. The tracking of your ball is different.
Muscle memory is based on repeated motions under predictable circumstances. And since Larry has never caught a ball with inverted vision, his muscle memory is essentially eliminated.
Nice.
This puts a greater emphasis on Larry's raw hand-eye coordination to make the catch. And amazingly, in this test, Larry has about 0.4 seconds to react to the ball and make the catch. And incredibly, even without the aid of muscle memory, Larry catches a perfect 10-for-10 upside down.
There you go, a little clip from the ESPN program Sports Science. Its host is on the show right now with me, John Brinkus, also author of the book Perfection Point. That brings to mind and illustrates the technology, the fact that you can measure what his eyes are seeing or the impact of a blow or all of that.
Sort of. You know, when we get to sit around and dream big and we get to say, all right, we want to test something crazy and we want to do a crazy test, what could we do? And literally when you have the opportunity to say, well, I want to hang one of the greatest receivers in the NFL upside down to see if they can catch. Oh, yeah, and I want to track where his eyes are. To be able to do that is awesome. I mean, we just love our job, and we love that we live in this era of technology where you can do that. So when you hang Larry upside down, first of all, he's totally game to do it. He's never done it before. And obviously, he didn't know that he was going to do it, so he couldn't train for it. So we had him do it. And what it really shows is how intuitive the circuitry is in an elite athlete's brain, that he's now has to say, all right, I'm upside down. I've never caught a ball like this. So everything is inverted. So I'm going to have to – it wasn't like we gave him a bunch of practice tries. We're like, okay, catch this ball, because we want to illustrate a principle that you hang a normal person upside down, it's going to hit him in the face. They're like, they don't know how to catch a ball upside down, and neither does Larry, but his brain is so intuitive. I'm saying, oh, I'm just flipping the algorithm that I use to track a ball, and I'm flipping it upside down. And he's such an elite athlete. It's one of those other things that you can tap into and say, look, elite athletes obviously are better than you and me in a lot of things. One of those is being intuitive.
And it turns out that the practice doing it normally is probably what allows for that, because you are flipping for the ball, you're jumping, you're in 1,000 different conditions for every one of those 1,000 catches, and the brain is catching on that it'll never be the same way twice.
Absolutely. And the brain also, what's very interesting at the elite level, and golf is the best illustration of this, you will perform better the less you actively think about something, because the brain is the best calculator on the planet. And it's amazing. There's a great book called The Zen of Golf that uses this fantastic analogy. It says when you wad up a ball of paper and throw it in the trash can, you don't know how big the wad is. You don't know how much it weighs. You don't even know how far you are. You don't know how big the target is. But your brain does all those calculations and performs it. And if you've ever seen, like, when you go out to the golf range and you haven't practiced in forever, or you never go out, you put a ball down, you have the stick, it's got a crooked end to it, you've never done this, but somehow the ball goes straight that first time. Everyone goes, ah, it's a total fluke. It seems like it's a fluke, but you just didn't know what to think about, so your brain did the calculations for you. Now it's when you go, oh my God, how do I do that again? Now let me think about that. Then you're terrible at it.
John, thank you for helping us think about all of this. What a pleasure talking with you. John Brinkus, host of Sports Science on ESPN and author of the book Perfection Point. And you can find out more about that at our website, stateofthings.org, a program produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, Megan Modafferi, and Anita Rao. Robin Copley, the technical director, Brent Wolf, the news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.